everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. For this episode, we are joined by Mark Garvey Candela from Twitch, who is the Director of Strategic Partnerships. And one of the major criticisms that we see of the industry so far is how top heavy it is. All of the investment, all of the attention is going at the very, very best of competitive play. Now, that's absolutely great for the fans, but how does that really support the rest of the esports ecosystem? Mark is leading a really interesting program within Twitch, which is focused on promoting collegiate esports all the way across the world. And I think that's going to be really important to introducing esports to many more potential fans, as well as increasing the amount of people that will be able to get involved as players or as managers or just involved in the esports ecosystem as a whole. So without further ado, Garvey, welcome onto the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So we were talking before we went live that your schedule has been absolutely mental recently with regards to managing all of these regional partners for the UE Masters. But before we get stuck into that, why don't you just tell the audience a little bit more about your journey, how you got stuck into being a gamer and working with Twitch. And I also think that everyone is very, very interested to hear a little bit more about your martial arts background, which I know that we've spoken about a few times.
That's something I don't like to discuss too much, but we get into it a little bit.
All right,
So I got my start in competitive gaming in 1993. I was a competitive Magic the Gathering player. Prior to that, as an escape from the harsh realities of Brooklyn, New York City, where I grew up in the 70s and 80s, I used role-playing as a an escape mechanism and to live life the way I wanted to live, as opposed to the way I was kind of forced to live. So that's really where the Garvey persona came on. I always role played in Dungeons and Dragons in the 80s and late 70s. A paladin, basically a goody two shoes in Dungeons and Dragons, always thought of other people, self-sacrificing, all the things that I had wished I could do in real life that the circumstances didn't allow for. And over time, I brought that into Magic the Gathering, and then in 1996 into, you know, the first ever MMO, which was really more of a social experiment than anything, called Ultima Online.
Sure.
And I haven't looked back since. So I spent 5 years in China, learning the scene there, learning Mandarin, learning esports, working with the teams, the nascent teams that were there, and the organizations. Came back to the States in 2010 or early 2011 and immediately moved to Korea for a year. Spent a lot of time with the very first iteration of OGN Champions. That was when CLG EU and a lot of the Western teams were invited by OGN out to play against the Korean teams. You know, for the first year of OGN Champions. So I did that basically. I like to learn the mechanics of anything I'm in, and that's why I liked Magic the Gathering so much. There was a lot of mechanics involved, and the more you know mechanics, the better you can apply yourself. So I just kind of went on my own little journey of self-knowledge and learning the mechanics from different countries. Spent a lot of time in Europe, South America, Korea, China. Again, learning what people were doing, more importantly, learning what people weren't doing. This way, when I came back to the States and I got the job with Twitch, I can really apply myself with vigor and consistency by learning what people were doing, the good things, the bad things, making sure I did not incorporate the things I did not like that I learned overseas and in my time in competitive gaming in North America. And then apply what people weren't doing to add value to whatever proposition or business plan I was putting together. So started working at Twitch in early 2014, helped them a lot with the international space. And then at the end of 2014, early 2015, I didn't really feel like I was adding value anymore. The teams were doing well, organizations were doing well, the industry was doing well. So I kind of took a step back and didn't want to think about growth too much. I wanted to think about sustainability. So as a pet project, for many, many years, I've been working with students, high school students and college students all over the world, learning their pain points, learning how they're applying themselves in education and what their hopes and dreams were when they graduated. So when I came back to America in, 2011, I immediately started working with CSL and TESPA, that were longstanding organizations in North America. Again, just to learn how they were working with students and creating opportunities for them. So 2015, I decided to take a step back from the pro scene and really follow my heart and follow my passions and work with more students. So I put a great program together. It took me a long time, again, speaking to a lot of students, a lot of administrators, a lot of industry people, just to find out how to put a business plan together that wasn't my opinion. It was based on fact, basically straight from the horse's mouth.
Sure.
So 2015 launched Twitch Student, and we've been really working as hard as we can, as diligently as we can, to create a consistent collegiate and high school program that knows no borders, that's inclusive, diverse, and collaborative all over the world. And that was the dream, and that's what I continue to work crazy hours for every day. As you had mentioned, it's an international program, right? So I have to be available for all different time zones, right? It's supposed to be about the other person's convenience. You can't really expect people to conform to your time zone or your views. You really have to learn from people and put yourself out there for them. Show them that love, show them that respect, even if it means setting your alarm clock for 1 o'clock to have a call with the Philippines, or a university in Korea, or Taiwan, or whatever the case may be, being available for them at a time that's convenient for them, just to show that additional level of love and respect and support.
Yeah, that's very important. That's actually one of the things that we've noticed over the last few weeks of trying to organize episodes with North American guests, that, especially on the West Coast. Now I'm having to be exceptionally flexible with my schedule and with the producers and the people at the location where we record. So I can completely 100% appreciate that. Let's dive into the UE Masters and these tournament structures that you're actually putting together. As far as I can understand from the UE Masters, this is just a specifically a European endeavor. I mean, you're rolling out separate versions elsewhere. So break down the UE Masters for me in terms of, it's not just for play. This is trying to enable students to really find a professional pathway to kind of actually build themselves up in the esports industry. What else are you guys trying to do in the European market? Because the university scene is exceptionally weak in comparison to North America, where collegiate sport budgets and initiatives are absolutely massive and are, you know, quite well followed, as far as I can understand, from college football and the like.
Yes. So the University Esports Masters is actually quite unique around the world. So I know that North American universities might be ahead in some ways, but I think Europe is ahead in some ways as well, in the fact that each country has one collegiate tournament organizer that leads to consistency and continuity for the university support. In North America, we have several collegiate organizations that work with universities. And sometimes it gets a little difficult understanding which tournament organizer to work with in what game and what space and scheduling and structure to the tournaments and stuff like that. So the UE Masters is quite unique. So it's six founding members. It's the United Kingdom, Germany, France, Italy, Portugal, and Spain. Those are the six founding members. And what we do is we work with them. I've worked with the NUL for almost 4 years now. I think they're great. I think they work with the societies in the United Kingdom really well. Josh Williams, who's the founder, he has a lot of passion, a lot of heart, and he literally bleeds for his dream of creating opportunities for students in the United Kingdom. So what we do is we work with each of those separate organizations, and we sponsor them for, multi-year sponsorships, just to make sure they have resources to continue to grow, to work with more students, to create better structures that are more inclusive, doesn't only work with, you know, one game title or two game titles. Like, diversity and inclusiveness means, you know, if you're a gamer, you should have a home on your campus. You shouldn't go to, you know, Warwick University and be a League of Legends player and not be able to find their club or have a family or a community that can support you, you know, just even if it's playing and socializing. So these six organizations put together a structure called the University Esports Masters. And what they do is, in late July, they bring the number one team from each six countries out to Penafiel, Portugal, where the Portuguese tournament organizer has created a very unique studio. So there's a live experience, there's a broadcast experience. They did it extremely well. And what I noticed there is, we talk about education and we talk about path to pro, but this is really about the experience that students are having at their time in university.
Yeah.
And there's a great 3-minute video that they did as a summary of the finals. And all the students really, all they spoke about was the experience they had traveling to a new country, meeting their colleagues from around Europe, eating different foods and hearing different languages and just getting to shake hands and be around the people that are at their level competing for their university and their country. So I think it was quite a unique experience. And these experiences lead one to, I think, find themselves in the industry or identify if it's something just as we said, an experience for them. And that's what it's supposed to be about, a student finding themselves within this industry, whether it's as a player, a commentator, a manager, even a lot of STEM students are part of the program, which is really, really important to us as well, right? STEM enrollment is really abysmal, and there's a huge attrition rate locked into that as well. So in North America, or in America specifically, we have like a 31% STEM enrollment rate with a 61% attrition rate.
Yeah.
That leaves us globally ranked 46 in terms of STEM education. But meanwhile, the heart and soul of the gaming and esports industry is really 90% of the jobs are STEM-oriented. Data scientists, computer scientists, software engineers, hardware engineers, network operations, all these different parts of the industry is what really created the industry. It's really not about the 1%. There's always going to be people that want to be super competitive, but it's really about expanding the industry outwards a little bit, creating more educated people that could come and contribute to the backside of the industry with these great STEM educations. So a crazy statistic is, while we have a 31% STEM enrollment rate in America, almost 70% of students that participate in gaming and esports are STEM students.
Yeah.
Now they're seeing a real direction where they could apply themselves, because it's not enough to, when I grew up, you worked to put a roof over your head and feed yourself. But now I think there's a different mindset. You want to feel fulfilled at work. You want to be happy at work. You want to enjoy work. And I think the STEM path, nobody really had a direction in where they would apply that after they graduated.
Mm.
Well, here's this vibrant new industry where these students can get a great education at university, graduate, and be able to apply themselves and innovate and create and keep this industry young, fresh, and always moving forward and outward.
Sure. That last point is actually something that I focus in on the Esports Observer podcast last week. We were speaking about how do you motivate more people to get into the space, and I was speaking about some of the awesome things that Bucks are doing with regards to kind of putting together a corporate fast track program into the university infrastructure, so that highly talented people and super engaged people from the local esports societies at various universities can find internships and can take that step up into the industry with a very, very clear path in, which I think is really important. Also, from a accessibility point of view and kind of what motivates people to to work and to grow within their job. So it's an absolutely great point that you mentioned. You know, one of the examples that I mentioned on the Observer podcast was that from, if you look at the working posters from the 1950s, you know, you just have these kind of faceless masses of people that are involved in more industrial work. You know, the focus was completely on just bringing home the bacon to your family, whereas nowadays everyone seems to be either more entitled, like some other people might say, or we feel like because there's so much more information out there and we're so much more connected, that I guess everyone wants to dream big and they want to feel like their day-to-day actually means something. So these kind of experiences in these industries and however you can empower fans to move in that direction, I think is really, really important. I mentioned on the last episode with Jason Nier, I believe, or it was on the Esports Observer episode again, talking about one of the programs that the Department of Education is putting in to a number of local schools in the UK. It's called the Digital Schoolhouse, and we're doing a national esports tournament where, you know, thousands of kids across a variety of schools will be able to get involved, and we'll be able to put teams together, and you know, some will be able to make content. It's mostly going to be in game around Rocket League as the main title, just because it's so non-violent and super accessible. And I'm actually going to be coaching one of the teams in Essex. I've just found out earlier this morning. I mean, I have never really done anything teaching related with gaming, apart from my terrible YouTube videos that were doing instructional stuff for Rome 2 Total War back in the day, with a very, very droll tone, and they got about 200 views across five episodes. But I'm actually quite keen to get involved and to see where this goes. Circling back to the major point of everything that you were just saying, and it's just, if you can give people these inspiring experiences or these moments that they will cherish, that's where inspiration really comes from, right? You know, like you hold those moments close, right?
Yeah, and so with University Esports Masters, it's in Europe right now, right? And if you notice, if you go to the uemasters.com website, it says the European edition. So that's quite interesting if you want to think about where this can go, this great consistent structure with continuity that provides not only great competition, but great experiences for the students. They'll be expanding outwards. I don't know if I'm at liberty to say what other countries are going to be involved, but I foresee by January there being 10 countries involved in the European series. And, you know, we're thinking about bringing it to the other regions. So as I mentioned before, I'll be flying to Brazil to support a great collegiate organization called TUES. And there's about 15 colleges that I work with personally there in Brazil that are all going to come out to this great collegiate finals on Saturday. And I'll meet with them and their administrators and do my usual thing where I'm there for the students. I'm bringing my account manager, Kevin, who's a recent grad from University of Washington. And Kevin works with the students and I work with the administrators. And it's basically to let students and administrators know that, yes, it's new. Yes, it's a bit frightening. Yes, you have to expand your comfort zones, but you're not in it by yourself. This is really a great program and a great industry where students, administrators, and industry people can come together as equals, all working together for a greater vision, right? And, you know, one person might be strong, but all three people together, you can't help but have a stronger program, a more consistent program. Yeah. So, but again, I think it's really amazing that students are as important as administrators, and administrators are as important as industry people. But we work together and we let them know that they're not in it by themselves, right? You have this great students that can drive the program, grow the program. You have administrators that could support them, and you have industry people that will support both of them as they're supporting the industry themselves. So it's really a great fidget spinner of support, right?
You didn't just go there. You didn't just go to fidget spinners.
Yeah, come on. I gotta try, right?
Oh, jeez. Okay. I completely agreed with everything else you said until then.
Like I said, it's as close to a perpetual motion of support as can possibly be. Maybe it will even defy physics and really become perpetual, where it just becomes the norm in the future for these universities to support the students supporting them. And maybe instead of fidget spinner, we can use the Jerry Maguire squared model, right? And that's very much what the Twitch student program is about. Help me, help you, help those that help me. So I can help you more, help them more, help me more, and so on and so forth. And then we can not only have this perpetual motion, but it will always be an expanding perpetual motion, where just more and more people can be involved, find themselves and apply their education, their passion, and their talents to a brand new industry and just create something that hasn't been done in history before, I think.
I think it's really important. And I think that among so many other issues that you can point towards in a nascent and teething industry such as esports, I think that improving all of the pathways for people to get involved and actually working out the clear methods of entry into the space, either, you know, even if they don't know it or if they don't realize it at the time. So say if you're just actually giving someone an amazing experience to be around people that are very similar to, or if someone from a very young age is super motivated and saying, I want to be the next caster for League of Legends, I want to be the next desk person for Counter-Strike, I want to code the next game. That's all going to be super exciting. And it's really, really necessary for the space as a whole, because one of the things that I speak about on an almost weekly basis with people getting in touch with me is, I'm a massive gamer, I've done nothing in the games industry, how can I get in? And even as a recruitment consultant and supposed to be helping people find their next step in their journey, it's very, very difficult to advise people. Apart from saying, just start doing something, anything now, either writing content, making videos, volunteering at events, just do something and you'll be in a better spot than you were yesterday. So from your side, are there any other bits of advice that you would give to anyone listening who wants to get stuck into the space? You could be a 10-year veteran in another industry, but you've just kind of stumbled across the podcast, or you could be a fan that's heard about it from elsewhere and isn't really sure how to get in. What would you advise these people to do? Or where are a few good areas to start? Say, even if they're not at university, what are the ways that you think people can make themselves stand out to start working in this market?
I think that's a great question. And I think I'll probably have a bit of an unusual answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes in two parts, right? So one is really thinking about where you want to be in 5 years and where you can apply yourself with passion and vigor in 5 years. And then working backwards from that 5-year light at the end of the tunnel goal of where you would like to be in 5 years. And then working out backwards, reverse engineering that goal and figuring out every step you need to do. What I like to do is figure out where a program wants to be in 5 years. Then the 3-year goal are three big buckets. Like, I break that one goal down to the three major components. Then from those three major components, I create tree graphs going all the way down into where I am right now. What's the foundation? This way, when you take a step back, you can do a lot of little things, right? But when you have this kind of plan, you're basically ticking off boxes on your tree graphs where you can roam about as opportunity dictates and as the opportunity you create for yourself dictates, but you're always steadily marching forward towards that light at the end of the tunnel, that 5-year goal. And I've noticed when you do something like this, it gives you a lot of flexibility, it gives you a lot of agility, and you can actually accelerate that 5-year plan down to maybe 4 years or maybe even 3 years in some cases, right? Because every step is always leading you towards that light at the end of the tunnel. So that's my best advice, is think where you want to be in 5 years, reverse engineer it down to where you are with every step that you could possibly think of through your research, your due diligence. And then once you get to ground level, start marching forward.
That's one of the main bits of advice that Weldon Green, the performance coach for TSM, CLG, and G2 was giving towards his own proposition is, you know, how did I kind of work out that I wanted to be in esports? How do you have a business idea? And, you know, how do you want to get there, well, first you've got to set some aims, and then you've got to kind of reduce those down into bite-sized chunks. And it's the same, you can kind of apply that theory to any part of your life as well. So say, if you want to lose weight, if you want to do a new hobby, if you want to be able to do a certain weight at the gym, if you want to be able to do X, Y, and Z, if you approach changing or pivoting your life and say, I want to be doing this in 2 weeks' time, then you're going to end up rushing into it, and you're probably going to stumble. And because you don't have a reasonable goal, you might end up failing, but you're just going to kind of take it one step at a time, work out some smaller objectives.
Yeah, there's no easy path to success. Success is really made up of many, many small things. So that's really one of the keys to thinking about reverse engineering a five-year plan, is that you understand the mechanics of what you need to do, and every step progresses you forward. And even going sideways a bit is still progressing forwards. The second part that I like to always talk to people about is low-cost proof of concepts with a plan behind how it can scale. So that might be something in your three-year, one of the big buckets is a lot of steps that create a proof of concept of how you would contribute. That doesn't cost much, but maybe your time and a little bit of resources. And you can use that proof of concept to get you where you want to go with a plan behind it that leads to your five-year that is really scaling that low-cost proof of concept. So I think those are the two biggest things. And on a side piece, I always tell people another great piece of advice is your network is your net worth in this industry. So, you know, be kind to as many people, be helpful, be self-sacrificing as much as you can to as many people as you can, because this leads to a great reputation. And then your network is basically the grease that helps all your mechanics that lead to your five-year plan run really, really smoothly. People can trust you. People can depend on you. They know you're self-sacrificing. They know you're thinking of the industry before you're thinking of yourself.
Sure.
And your network being applied to your five-year goal, it just makes things exponentially easier.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we've been speaking for most of this year after Matt Adams introduced us a few months back. And most of the time we kind of start a conversation about something specifically, and then we just end up getting lost in the philosophical ideas around actually how you go about getting this done. So I think that's really, really important, is to kind of treat everyone as you'd like to be treated. You know, I don't have a lot of organized faith, but there are several of those kind of key tenets that I think everyone can definitely benefit from in a professional perspective, not just for your own gain, but, you know, if you actually give people time just to have a chat and work out their story, like you never know what's going to happen in the future. I know that you're running up against the clock here. So we had a bunch of other stuff that we want to talk about. I'm going to have to bring you back on to explore that in the new year, speak about more of Twitch's broader direction with regards to moving beyond gaming and how that has been influenced by competitive streaming platforms. There's a lot of stuff that I wanted to mine into there and pick your brain on, because obviously this area of the market is becoming increasingly competitive, and Twitch, as the home of gaming, has to innovate and has to stay nimble to stay on top.
But I know we spoke a lot about about students and the opportunity in this industry for them, and the opportunity for industry to work with students, and I could talk about that for days and days. But I would love to absolutely get on another call with you and do another podcast talking about the industry as a whole, where it came from, where it is now, where it's going, what are some of the milestones, what metrics do we use to gauge success? All those things are great, great topics, and I'd be very happy to share my experiences and you know, explain whatever mechanics and metrics that you might wish me to explain.
Awesome. That would be great. So we've just got one question before I let you go, which is our recurring segment, which we are going to call this week Joe and Garvey's Excellent Adventure. And the question is...
Nice.
Garvey, if you could have any role in esports, past, present, fantasy, or future, what would it be and why?
So I have to be 100% honest with you here. I'm extremely fortunate. I'm extremely happy to be where I am right now. You know, running the Twitch student program. We're going to create a sister program to that called Twitch Educate. And I really love working for Twitch. I've been working with them for many, many years now, officially and unofficially. And it's not that I like to push Twitch, but again, I learned the mechanics of the industry, right? I know what tools are available, what support can be given, and what knowledge can be shared. And I think the tools and features that Twitch has and the autonomy and trust that they have in me to create new programs that really defy the standards of the industry. I think I am where I always dreamed of being. This was really a dream for me. You know, they gave me full support in creating a student program when nobody else was even thinking about students and what students can contribute, not only to their own well-being, but to the industry that we all love so much, to keep creating and innovating and creating something truly unique in capitalism, right? So I couldn't ask for anything more. And again, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. I just know what is being done in the industry elsewhere and the positions that some people have. And I'm just extremely fortunate there.
Sure. And that's a very strong answer. I mean, with that idea behind you, obviously it makes sense to be in that position to have as larger impact as possible, especially in an industry such as esports, which, as everyone knows by now, is so fractured, has so many independent ecosystems underneath each of the publishers and the titles themselves, that there are a few examples of kind of international cooperation, be it in WISA or World of Players Association, or the recently announced German National Federation, the ESBD as well. So it's a very smart place to be. I kind of thought that would be your answer, but it's, super, super interesting. And I look forward to seeing how this all rolls out over the course of the next few months and see what's next from you. Mr. Garvey, we have hit the end of our slot for this podcast, so
I wish we had more time.
We will do in the new year. I'm absolutely sure of it. Where can the audience reach you if they want to get in touch?
Well, if you're a student in high school or college, you could always reach out to twitchstudent@twitch.tv and drop us a line, and my entire team has access to that email. We'd love to know where you are, what you're doing, and how we could support you. My Twitter is GarveyNYC. Got to give a little shout out to my roots. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, almost my entire life. And those are the two best ways. I think email would be best, because I would really love to hear about students and what their hopes and dreams are, what their pain points are, so we can apply ourselves and support as much as we can.
Okay, awesome. Guys, that's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable. Garvey, thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm sure that we'll speak to you more in the new year. If you want to reach out to us, we are on Facebook at Looking for Group LFGHR. My Twitter is Barely Qualified. And please, if you've enjoyed the episode, please leave us a rating and a review on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, whichever platform you're using. It would help us get our message and reach out to a lot more people across the space. Garvey, thank you very much for the time. And everyone else, we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, I want to thank your community as well for taking the time to hear us chat a bit. And I know we went wide ranging, but I want to also thank you for your time. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I look forward to more time with you and your community.
Awesome, man.